There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Here we go. It's Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan. The legendary Sean Sullivan is taking a little time off once again. Hope everyone's doing well here. Welcome to Midday Mobile. Sitting in with me for the 2 hours, North Alabama legislator, but looking to talk about some state issues. The one and only State Representative Mike Ball. How are you doing this afternoon, Representative?
I'm just doing wonderful, and I'm so glad you've invited me to come on and pontificate with your Mobile listeners.
Well, speaking of North Alabama guys, joining us now, a blast from the past, if you will, was unable to make it on my program, but has made time for us in this show. I'm very grateful for that. From WVNN, live local, Dale Jackson is on the line. Dale, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. I love being here. Glad to be on with Representative Mike Ball, as always.
I'm glad I could reunite you two in one way.
He owes me some drinks. I know I bought last time, then he just disappeared.
Well,
when it gets your turn again, I'll show back up.
So tell me, Dale, your reaction to the hysteria that has ensued since the Saturday call by our gatekeepers in the mainstream media to the presidential election.
I'll sum it up in one sentence. Russia is forcing Trump to not concede. That has actually been said. People actually think that. That shows you everything you need to know about how stupid this conversation is. In 2016, they still haven't conceded. It's been like, 1,200 days? So when we get to, day 1,200, then they can talk to me. I bet Trump can concede by Wednesday.
Do you, do you buy into the notion that the do you see any pathway forward for this presidential election to be given to Donald Trump?
And I, you know what they got to get? They got to get one big win somewhere that they can then say, see, and then maybe they can replicate that elsewhere. But in, barring some massive, brilliant legal strategy, I just don't know what they could do, because the way they have to fight this is in court. He can fight in the arena of public opinion. Mean tweets and Facebook posts and things like that by Trump supporters are not going to do anything. It has to be fought by his legal team, and it just doesn't really scream we're serious and we've got something serious here. And when you stand outside the Four Seasons Lawn Care Service in Philadelphia and argue, I mean, it just doesn't look serious. I hope they're successful, and I don't think Trump can concede until all his legal challenges are exhausted, but I just don't see a path to victory here. I just don't see it.
Well, and that's the thing. I have been underwhelmed by the a little underwhelmed. I think you're doing, I mean, it's kind of a unique circumstance. Who has to contest a presidential election on this level on like five different fronts? But I am a little underwhelmed by the campaign's pushback thus far.
Yeah, but Jeff, if it's five different fronts, pick one and win. You know what I mean? Give us the story that you got with the one that's a slam dunk, and then you give credibility to the rest of the argument. And it just seems like maybe that is lacking here. And granted, he's got the same thing Jack Nick that he always has. The media and their Democrats, they're working in politics. They always have. No matter what comes up, they'll mock it or whatever. But he's got to get something that gets into a court somewhere, and they say, "Oh no, you can't do this. You got to toss out these $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 votes here that came in late, and you guys changed the postmarks on and all this. But how do you do that once they're commingled? How do you do it? Okay, so let's say you have a, and this is what they're against. Let's say in Pennsylvania or wherever, they say, yeah, they changed some of the postmarks, and they stamped them late. Well, where are those ballots? Which ballots were they? Were they all Biden ballots? I mean, if you found, let's just say you found 10,000 envelopes illegally postmarked, you just play Joe Biden? I mean, how exactly do you do that? So I just don't know what the strategy is here, and I don't think they've laid it out very well. We know public opinion is not the place to do that, but there's got to be some sort of argument made other than I won.
Well, let's play this out now. Let's say that they're successful. I mean, you want to talk about super spreader events. If the Trump campaign is successful, it's going to be like nothing we've ever seen in the streets of America if they're over able to turn this back in their direction, I think.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. You deal with those people as they come. If they want to burn down their neighborhoods, go right ahead. I don't care.
Well, I'm just speculating
here. Care. Yeah, and I don't mean I don't care, but you can't. I mean, that's like saying, you know, my wife told me, she's going to kill me for saying this. She told me, she's like, I voted for Trump, but I almost hope he loses just so a lot of this goes away. And I think there's a lot of people that feel that exact same way. They were almost bullied into submission by what went on. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that's how a lot of people feel. Like, oh, we can't do this because if it happens, look what's going to happen. I think that could have had an impact, too. Some people call that voter suppression. That word carries with it those words carry very heavy meanings, and we shouldn't kind of say it like that. But I get where they're coming from, and so I don't think they'll be mad at the reason not to do something.
Do you think this really does go away, though?
I don't know what go away looks like. I just think that after 2016, that no one is in any position to tell anyone, shut up and get over it. I mean, there's just no one's in any position to do that. They're just not. And they can say it to themselves, and they can go off on their cable news desks in New York and Washington, D.C., and the folks at AL.com, that they'll can you believe these guys saying these things. Oh, they can do all of that. But all we have to do is look at them and say, 2016, guys. So, I mean, their credibility is just getting crushed even further amongst people who are not slavishly sycophantic towards them. And you know, it's a bit ridiculous. And I think they all know they don't care. Scoreboard. That's what they're saying. Just look at the scoreboard.
Well, it's something I think I heard you say this. You think if Joe Biden is indeed president-elect and we go forward, they're just going to be, you're going to see the CNNs and MSNBCs just go massive layoffs. They're going to, that the media tries to remake itself into something else. What happens to the whole media landscape that we spend so much time talking about?
I don't know how many layoffs there will be, because I think the argument that what they will do and the argument they will make is they basically will have to act as the palace guard. I mean, that's what they'll have to do. These Trump-supporting congressmen now are not letting Joe Biden have X, whatever X is, you know, whatever it is. They won or they lost, and Joe Biden won, and Mitch McConnell's do-nothing Senate, and you know, all the other nonsense. So they'll have that same, oh my gosh, you believe the Republicans are so bad. Well, the Democrats just want to be so kind and loving. And why are the Republicans so mean to them? You know, that kind of stuff. And so I think that becomes their job right now. Their job becomes how it starts.
Dell, we got to get a break. Folks want to get your newsletter. They want to find you on social media. Tell them where to go.
Can I ask my ball question first before we go?
Go for it.
What is going to happen with voting in the state of Alabama? Are we going to maintain the status quo? Will we see something where they tighten up? They had people at courthouses on Saturdays and Sundays. I don't think there's any laws that allow that. If it is just kind of a free-for-all. Did you see any tightening of the voting frame? Alabama.
I think there will be a lot of different proposals that will be made and there might be some tweaks on it, but by and large, other than the long lines, which was unprecedented turnout, and the COVID working together to slow down the voting, make it exponentially difficult for the on same day voters, I think our voting process in Alabama works pretty well, certainly better than most, than many of the other states that I'm seeing. So I don't think we're going to make a whole lot of major changes soon. I do hope that many people as possible to be able to vote and not have to miss work, or and there's lots of ways to do it, and we can do that while continuing to protect the integrity of the system, because if you don't have as many checks and balances and as transparent a system, voting system, as possible, if people don't have confidence in the outcome, then you're going to have, then it's going to hamper the ability of those who are elected to govern, because and you've got enough people that are going to throw out allegations without much evidence. People don't need evidence in politics to make accusations, but it's important you have a system that makes those accusations look ridiculous.
Gotcha. All right, Jack, tell me where everyone they can reach.
Also, way to step on my forthcoming segment there, Dale. But tell folks where they can sign up for your newsletter and find you on social media.
You go to yellowhammernews.com, sign up for my 7 things you should be talking about today every morning. You'll get it emailed and come right into your mailbox. You can also go to emailjackshow.com. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere. And don't forget the brand new DaleJacksonBooks.com. DaleJacksonBooks.com. I've written a children's book. It is fantastic. Go check it out. DaleJacksonBooks.com.
All right, Dale. We'll talk again real soon. Thanks for making time.
Thank you.
Dale Jackson, WVNN, ladies and gentlemen, there to tell us about his children's book. All right, guys, we got to work in a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back to Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore sitting in for Sean Sullivan on this Monday afternoon. Everyone's doing well out there, 22 minutes after the hour. Sitting in with me, very grateful to have State Representative Mike Ball. Representative Ball, a lot going on. We're kind of focused on a little bit on some state things. I know this is a very important thing. It's totally not really in the news right now, but you were a big advocate of the medical marijuana bill. You made it through the Senate in 2019. Do you think, what are the prospects looking like for medical marijuana in a future session?
Well, it made it through the Senate in 2019, and it also made it through the Senate very quickly in 2020. As a matter of fact, let me just bring people up to date of where we are on it. When we came up with a pretty good bill in 2019, it came through the Senate, and I, quite frankly, counting the votes, I believe I had the votes to pass it out of the House, but there were those in the leadership that had cold feet, and caught them off guard, and so they started putting procedural roadblocks in the way to keep it from getting to a vote, and I understand it was a pretty big step. The Attorney General came out against it, and some people had cold feet, so. You know, I agreed to back off in 2019 if they would give it a vote in 2020 and give it a fair shot in 2020. And what we did, what I really wanted, was to get a commission in place to bring different people from the business sector, particularly medical sector more than anything. Bring them in place and find ways that to develop some protocols and a system in place to deliver cannabis products to people who need it through medical procedure in a way that it can help people. And quite frankly, the commission recommended a very good bill in 2020. It came out of the Senate quite handily. It was it was ready to start moving in the House. I believe the folks in the Health Committee were ready for it. I believe we probably would have had the, I believe we had the votes to get it out. And we were going to get a fair hearing, I believe. And once we got it to the floor, we were going to pass that thing if that pandemic hadn't hit and caused us to shut everything down too quick. So, and I haven't seen anything that changes where that is now for this year. And we all, it is time for us to pick it up. And we have a very good bill. We need to pick it up, and we need to go ahead and pass it. There's a lot of states with referendum that's moving that out, and I don't think some of those states are being nearly as deliberative about it as we are. I think we've got a very good bill, very good process to make medical cannabis available for folks who can use it, and it is not. It doesn't have to be a step toward recreational. You know, it can be if someday future legislators want to do it. Even if it ever gets to that point, at least there will be a regulatory structure in place instead of the way a lot of people do it with political force.
Well, that's just the thing. You see, we saw Mississippi in this election. They got medical marijuana. Now Florida has it. States around Alabama, it just seems like Alabama is it's going to be lasting. It's just like the lottery, right?
We don't have to be last. As a matter of fact, if we'll go ahead and do it, we'll be maybe 30 35 36 somewhere in that range. We'll be ahead of where we usually are, but now Mississippi did it with the initiative process. And I think the process that we have and we're proposing is very good. It's past time to do it. And I just hope one of the things we have worked hard to try to depoliticize this issue. You know, when things get highly political, it gets very crazy. But this has been issue. We've tried to depoliticize it, focus our attention on who can be helped, finding ways to help those people who can be helped without putting it in the hands of people who abuse it. Because quite frankly, people that want to abuse marijuana, they can do it right now. They don't need this. Where we're at right now in Alabama with the position we got, the only people we're keeping from having access to cannabis are people who could be helped by it through their doctor.
251-343-0106 if you want to weigh in on any of this, hit us up on the text line, particularly if you can. But is there any kind of, we just got a couple minutes here, is there any kind of will from the legislature? I guess you really got to have some kind of in with the leadership to get it through the House.
I think we do have it. There are those who are afraid of it. I think that fear is based on fear and ignorance. You know, there are some people who have spent a lot of time and a lot of effort studying the harmful effects of marijuana, and I don't contest that there are some harmful effects. But a lot of those people, they've only looked at the harmful effects, and they haven't looked at the potential benefits and the benefits that people have had by making it available. As a matter of fact, there was one guy from law enforcement came to the Republican caucus and made a presentation that looked like something out of Reefer Madness. It was so much propaganda, one-sided propaganda, and that man, he was somebody from law enforcement, as a matter of fact, federal law enforcement. And quite frankly, if the federal government would schedule it down from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 or 3, where medical people could use it, where universities could research it, then the plant could be used the way that God intended for it to be used when he created it, instead of just abused. I'm sorry I'm filibustering, but I'm very passionate about this because I know people who can be helped by it. Many people.
Well, we got to get a break in here, Representative Ball. We're going to pick this up on the other side. Like I said, hit us up, 251-343-0106. This is Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan. Just get a little time away. Wishing him well. Hope he's enjoying himself. We're here with State Representative Mike Ball joining me for the entirety of the program. Very grateful for that. We're talking about medical marijuana and getting it through the legislature. It made it through the State Senate in 2019, kind of died in the House. Mississippi has passed its medical marijuana by a referendum in the election on Tuesday. A couple of things going here. We got a text from Derek at Fairhope says, they make too much money keeping it illegal. Why are we fooling ourselves? Well, I guess that's one way to look at it. Let's work in a call. Let's hear from Randy in Robertsdale wants to talk about this. Randy, what's on your mind?
Hey, Jeff, I'm glad for you to take my call. You know, most people don't realize that the state of Alabama actually has legal prescription marijuana. When my wife was going through chemo, the doctor prescribed her medical marijuana, and we went locally to, I don't want to advertise, but CVS, locally in Robertsdale, with a prescription, and they filled it. The only difference is it's in a pill form. It's nothing that you smoke or anything like that. It's a little old tiny white pill, looks like a little fish egg. So this is nothing new. You know, it's just trying to get something passed in a different form, I guess.
Hey, thanks for the call, Randy. So Representative Randy says that there's already medical marijuana available, just that you could go and get a pill form of the substance, and that this is not this is anything new, right? Necessarily.
Right. He's talking about Marinol, which is actually high THC, low CDB. Actually, it has a lot of psychoactive properties, and quite frankly, that pill form is not the same as medical cannabis. And we're not talking about legalizing weed. We're talking about oil forms, some other things, because there's something called the entourage effect between the THCs and the CBDs and other trace elements in it that they work together that really can't be replicated in a pill form. And I have talked, there are so many medical people who have researched this. Israel is way ahead of us on research of this. But what has happened, because our government overreacted to it in the 70s, because of political purposes, what they did, the pharmaceutical companies, they want this artificial thing which doesn't do the same for a myriad of things. What really got me started was the seizure control, and in children who suffer these debilitating seizures. And that's what got me started. And the pushback of people who don't know what they're talking about and haven't, and even folks who are familiar, this is not about Cheech and Chong. This is not about legalizing marijuana. The fact is, cocaine is a Schedule II. And there has been this gross overreaction. And I have heard from doctors, and there were doctors on our study group, but Dr. Jerzy Slavarsky, who headed up the research that we started as a result of Carley's Law, he tells me that he would rather use CBD and medical cannabis, and quite frankly, this proposal, Dr. Slavarsky was the one that has convinced me of the need for us to do this, but But he, for the treatment of pain, he says that that cannabis is far more effective, or much more effective, and a whole lot more less dangerous. Because of the, first of all, nobody, there hasn't been a documented case of somebody dying just from an overdose of cannabis. There maybe somebody can come up with one somewhere, but the chances of overdose are remote. The people that can abuse, that want to abuse it, they can get pot and smoke it right now. This is not that. That's, you know, it's the thing I have to keep fighting on this, is people don't understand what this is. They keep thinking about what it isn't, and they're letting their fears that have been just hammered down their throat. They probably know some folks that abuse marijuana. Those people that we're not legalizing marijuana for recreational purposes. I have no intention of ever doing that. But I do think that we need to have a process to make this available instead of these opioids, that there have been an untold number of people that have died as a result of that. And a lot of those people get hooked on it because of pain treatment for pain. And I'm not downplaying treatment of pain, but I'm saying let's let our doctors have another option. The thing is, it's been politicians and lawyers that have set policy on this instead of medical people mostly. I'm sorry.
Let's work in another call here. Dan from Fairhope wants to weigh in on marijuana. Dan, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, how are you? So I've been considering the CBD. I've got a really bad knee, and I'm supposed to have surgery that I just don't want to. I also just discovered I'm having ocular migraines, which simulate seizures. But on top of all of that, I've got an artificial heart valve. I'm on blood thinners, and et cetera. And I've wondered how the CBD interacts with the heart medication.
Well, this might be a question for somebody with a medical expertise. Thanks for the call. Representative, I guess here is the point that could you introduce marijuana if you're already taking, or medical marijuana, let's say, if you're already on other medications? Like, does it interact with other medications? Could that be a potential hiccup?
Well, you know, everything you put in your body interacts with everything else you put in your body. I'm not a doctor, but the senator who developed this bill, who headed up the commission, Senator Tim Melson, is a doctor and a medical researcher. And there were a lot of them on that commission. Yes, like anything else, it can be harmful. Now, what we've done, this commission would set the protocols. One of the things in this bill that required drug testing, so we could make sure, so we would know what the people who are recommended this, who have a card, they would have to be overseen by medical people, and if they're using other drugs, then they could be pulled. What I would like to do, and what this bill in its present form is doing, it is giving this commission oversight over it. But right now, who has oversight over it? It's lawyers, prosecutors, law enforcement, and politicians. And we need to release the medical people and give them every option available. You know, this, I am thoroughly convinced that this opioid, that had we somehow developed and practiced, and the medical people been able to develop the use of cannabis instead of these opioids, I think this epidemic that has swept across our land, it certainly would have been mitigated.
Yeah, and I guess the you know, just it, it's it's become such a hot button. It, obviously, it's the slippery slope argument that everybody likes to roll out. But isn't it just people that culturally, regardless of the science and the benefits, that will never, ever embrace medical marijuana because it's just is the brand?
Well, you know what's so grievous to me is there are people who are terminal cancer patients who are using medical marijuana, and they're having to commit a crime to do it, and it's helping them. It helps their appetite. It eases their suffering, and they're ashamed of it because of the stigma that propaganda and politics has created. Now, understand, I spent a career in law enforcement. I spent 25 years in law enforcement, most of it with Alabama Bureau of Investigation. And I was an investigator long before I was a politician. I believe in finding the truth and following the truth. And quite frankly, for many years while I was in the legislature, I opposed all these marijuana bills, including the medical marijuana. But I was brought to my senses because of an email from a grandmother that she sent it to me about the CDB oil and her grandchild who suffered these horrible seizures that would have killed her. And Dr. Sanjay Gupta, I think, did a documentary about CDB oil in 2013. And this was 2014. Well, it was actually October 2013. When she sent me the email, and I was trying to find a way to tell her why we can't do it. But being an investigator instead of a politician, I know the politics were bad because I've been a Republican for a long time. But I knew the politics were bad, so I was trying to find a way to tell her why we couldn't do it. But you know what? When I started following the evidence, the evidence forced me to change my mind. As a matter of fact, I had to choose between politics and the truth. And I will tell you, I would ask a lot of those people who says, well, I'm against it. I get it. But it's not the drug. It's the use that people have of the drug. There are people who abuse marijuana. I get that. They're doing it right now, and they can do it right now. But currently, because the law isn't making the good available, what they're able to do is keep people who are law-abiding citizens who could have their suffering eased. Here we are trying to put another tool in the hands of the medical profession. It's fear and ignorance, and I know because I had the same thing for many years, but it's fear and ignorance that keeps us from saying, well, what about this? And there is medical evidence. A Schedule I narcotic means there's no medical use. Well, that's not true. Our government policy is out of line.
Let's get a break in here. We'll come right back. This is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for listening to Midday Mobile, 52 minutes after the hour on this Monday afternoon. See again with this is State Representative Mike Ball. And as always, when you have Mike Ball on, he brings a guitar or some musical instrument of some sort. So, Representative, what you got going on for us today? Are you going to play us something?
Well, I never turn down a chance. And as a matter of fact, I've always played music since I was in law enforcement and politics. It's a form of therapy for me, and you can see I don't have to. I really don't need any cannabis. I use music. It has the same the proper effect on me. But I was thinking because of this election, a lot of people are all up in arms and everything, and there was an old Ricky Skaggs song that come to mind that I thought maybe I should sing today.
All right, let it go.
You know this this crazy world makes us all feel bad. I sit and watch the news, I just get mad. We ought to stop and smell the roses on the ground. Get out today and spread a little love around. Talk to your neighbor, volunteer a favor. Help out a stranger when his car's broke down. Thank your wife for kissing. When your kids talk, listen. It makes a lovely sound. Spread a little love around. You know it don't take much to make somebody's day. A kind word and tender touch go a long way. We can change the whole world if we'll start in our hometown. Get out today and spread a little love around. Tell your mom you love her. Bear hug your brother. Treat your sister to a night out on the town. Throw a ball to Rover. Wrestle in the clover. Put a smile on that old hound and spread a little love around. Pat your darling's fanny. Tickle on your granny. Dance with the kids and act just like a clown. Little tiny kiss and hug. We all sure need that stuff. Turn a frown upside down and spread a little love around. When this world gets you down, just spread a little love around.
I always want to use that sound effect. I never have the opportunity. Yeah.
That's my favorite audience. They always clap right on time.
Yeah, they do. Let's get to the text line here. They won't ever let us use weed as medicine. I could grow it in the woods pretty much anywhere in the state of Alabama. I cannot do that with a pill. Therefore, pharmaceutical companies will never let marijuana be appropriate because they can't stop us from growing it ourselves. This is from an unnamed texter.
One of the things, and this bill that we're doing certainly doesn't allow for, but people can grow weed and use as much as they want. The thing is, and this is from talking to the medical people, to use it medically and therapeutically with the medical profession, they need to be able to control the balance of the THCs and CBDs in it, and they could do it with an oil and vapor. There's lots of ways to do it, but what we need to do is we need it to be professionally grown and bred for different balances of THC and CBD and other things, different varieties for different purposes, because there are a lot of things that it can help people with, one of which PTSD. And I will tell you, mental illness is a real thing, and people who abuse marijuana, if you don't know what you're getting or what you're doing, you know, it can be harmful. What we're trying to do is to step into the 21st century, and with genetic research, there's a lot of potential for therapeutic uses of this, but our fear and our ignorance has kept the medical profession and our universities it's just locked out our research, and we need to stop this. We need to back off from the politics. We need to, and I understand those people out in the field growing weed, quite frankly, they can do that. And I'm not sure that, you know, if I had a loved one of mine who was suffering with cancer and from the side effects of chemo that causes them to lose their appetite, I think I'd help them get it.
We got to get a break in here.
I'm sorry.
We're a hard break here. This is FM Talk 106.5.
There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Yeah, welcome back to Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on this Monday afternoon, 7 minutes after the hour. I hope everyone's doing well out there. Still also sitting in with us, Mike Ball, state representative for Madison, Alabama. Again, sitting in. We're grateful he could join us for the entirety of the program. Just catch up on a few things here. Starting to see some statements trickle in about recognizing Joe Biden as president-elect from members of Congress and other places, but also us, Defense Secretary Mike Esper is out, according to reports, according to Trump's tweets. So already a few changes coming out of Saturday's announcement. Not sure what that means, but I'll try to figure that out, and we'll let you know as soon as we do. Representative Ball, you wanted to give a mention to someone listening in today.
Oh yes, Lenny Young. If for those listeners who are familiar with Lenny's Law, you know, after we did Carly's Law that authorized the research into this back in 2014 is when we passed the law, and it was nearly a year before the research got started. And I was hoping that some of these families and some of these children who suffered from these seizures would be able to have access to it. Well, Lenny is a child who didn't qualify for the study because of other medications she was on, I think, and whatever reason, they really locked down a lot of protocols on it and narrowed the study. And her family had to move to Oregon to be able to explore the idea of treating these seizures with cannabis. There was lots of medical evidence in its favor even before we had our study. But they had their family, and it broke my heart when Lenny had to move to Oregon. As a matter of fact, for those of you that followed the news, there was a picture of me holding Lenny the night that we passed Carly's Law, and she was just first of all, the drugs that they had her on just made her a little precious little zombie, and it broke my heart that Alabamians had to be refugees from Alabama to be able to seek treatment with the CDB oil. And about a year after, it was about a year after they had started the program, and Lenny and their family, they all got moved out to Oregon. And just a couple of weeks, maybe certainly less than a month after she started on the oil, her mother Amy posted a video of Lenny watching Frozen. And it was, and as I watched that video, it was the most miraculous thing that I saw, that joy on that baby's face as she was watching the video Frozen. And while I was watching that was when the idea for Lenny's Law, which was to decriminalize the use of the oil for the people that have it for this person, you know, the idea of it being Lenny's Law and what we had, it just all flooded to me. And and we were able to pass it. I will say this, and what Lenny's Law did, you know, somebody mentioned that I'm not from the medical profession, or maybe I brought it up. The fact is, I'm not. Dr. Melson, who's crafted this legislation, and the people that studied on the study commission, they're all, a lot of them are doctors. But I come from law enforcement. But here's what I know. I know who should be criminals and who shouldn't. And people who possess this substance to try to ease the suffering of a loved one, who communicate with their doctors for legitimate medical purposes, who actually are able to help their people, they shouldn't be under jeopardy of prosecution. And that's what Lenny's Law was. So that being said, I found out that Lenny is listening to the radio broadcast today. And I just want to say, hi, Lenny. I love you. And I'm so proud of you.
All right. Well, it's good. It gets us good to have all kinds of listeners out there who do. Representative Ball, let's switch gears here. And Dale touched on it a little bit in that very first segment. I saw you were quoted. I think it was a WAFF story, but I'm not sure. Early voting. Should we do early voting in Alabama? I mean, here we are in this election where everybody's up in arms, as you said, about the election outcome and the voting processes, and there seems to be eroding confidence in our election systems. Does Alabama need to do anything to change things?
Here's the thing. We should always look at what we do and try to find ways to make voting as easy and accessible. You know, we did have great long lines, and people in those lines were Republicans and Democrats, voted for Trump and Biden. Every citizen that, you know, they shouldn't have to take off work 2 hours to vote. And early voting is a good option to look at. As a matter of fact, we had early voting a couple of decades ago, and it lasted a few election cycles, and there was such a low response to it that they repealed it. It was costing a lot, and not many people were exercising it. But there's lots of ways to vote and keep the integrity of the ballot, and we need to make it as easy for as many people to vote legally one time as possible. I do know that in my previous life, when I was with the Alabama Bureau of Investigation, I did investigate some voter frauds and all kinds of corruption, as a matter of fact, and the case that I remember the most was it was in a Republican primary, and it was absentee voter fraud. You know, bootleggers were collecting votes for certain candidates for an amount of money. The thing is that we need to reduce, make sure that it's as difficult as possible to cheat, but as easy as possible to vote. So the idea of exploring options for early voting, I think that's something worth exploring and finding ways to make it as difficult for anybody to cheat as possible.
Well, and I suppose that's true, but we always had long lines and things like that. I'm not saying that necessarily because we've always done it this way, it's the right way, but you know, there's always been lines at the ballot box. You just had a very motivated electorate this cycle. And who's to say in future elections, perhaps, well, presidential midterm, that you're going to have this same level of compelling interest?
Well, it wasn't just there were a myriad of things that came together and made it extra difficult. You know, part of it was the COVID thing, I think, too. It made the lines longer and a lot of precautions put in place at the voting stations. I'm just saying that early voting, we don't have to knee-jerk be against everything that's proposed. We just need to think things through and be deliberate and always, never stop looking for the best practices, the best, most efficient way to vote, to have it as efficient, transparent, and have a process in place that everybody can have confidence in, regardless of how it turns out. I'm certainly not committing to a bill I haven't seen yet or a procedure I haven't seen. But I have a very open mind, and I think we should go down there, and we should all think, and we, you know, there are times when to get the best legislation, you have to flip your political switch off and stop thinking about this favors us or them. We need to think what favors everybody, what favors the process. We need to make sure we have a transparent process and a process that we could all have confidence in.
All right, we're going to break here. We will return. This is Midday Mobile at FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, we'll be checking back in with Midday Mobile guest host Jeff Poore and State Representative Mike Ball here in just a minute. This is Dalton Orwig with FM Talk 106.5. And right now I want to check in with Larry Kirby with LCM Motor Cars. Hey, Larry.
Good afternoon, Dalton. How are you today?
Doing fine, and weather outside fantastic right now. You know, normally when you talk with Sean or me, we're talking trucks. But today, you want to switch it up a little bit. What kind of cars do you have out there on the lot?
You know, we got a great selection of cars. We got Dodge Chargers, we got Ford Mustangs, we got Toyota Camrys, we got Toyota Avalons, we got Mercedes Benz, we got Chevrolet Cruzes. So we got a mix of just about everything. We got family cars, gas misers, and sports cars.
You got a heck of a selection out there. So whether you want to look good or use that car to, you know, tow family and gear around while you're looking good, you got a heck of a selection there.
Absolutely. A tremendous selection. We got a great financing to go with it.
Yeah, let's talk about financing. What kind of options do we have with LCM?
We got multiple options. Matter of fact, we had a gentleman in here earlier today that had got what he called a really good rate, and we were able to beat it 3 points.
Wow. That's fantastic. All right. If someone's interested in getting up with you or maybe checking out the lot in person, how do they find you?
Come see us at the corner of Highway 90 and Plantation Road. Look us up online at lcmmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
All right. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
That's Larry Kirby checking in from LCM Motor Cars. And now back out to the palatial Jeff Poore Studios for the remainder of Midday Mobile. Here you go, Jeff.
Thank you, Dalton. Palacios, I don't know. Obviously, looking forward to getting back in the studio in Mobile. Other news here. You'll be glad to know that Clyde and Henrietta have been pardoned by Governor Ivey, or Clyde and Henrietta. That's the turkeys. They have been pardoned. So the Bates House of Turkey every year puts on or provides turkeys to put on governor's ceremonial pardoning of two turkeys who would be spared until, from somebody's Thanksgiving dinner. But I digress. Still with this, State Representative Mike Ball. Tell me something, Representative. Get back to the matters of a business of the state here. Well, what do you think? You think we're going to see a special session now that the election has come and gone? Oh, did we lose Representative Ball? I believe we did. We'll try to effort him back here in just a moment. The discussion about a special session, I know there's a lot of things to work on there with that. Keep COVID from spreading within the chamber of the House. So there we go. I think he's back now. Representative Ball, we're talking about special session. It sounds to me like maybe you could pull it off in the upper chamber in the Senate, but a lot of people don't think it's going to happen in the lower chamber in the House. But there sounds like there's an iPad system. Well, what do you think, special session or not?
I think I'd be shocked if we don't have a special session to deal with. There's some economic development things, and that thing about the lawsuits. There's a few things that probably needs to be handled ahead of the session. And this session, there is such a heavy plate, so many major things that we should have and could have dealt with, like medical cannabis in the 2020 session. We would have passed it, I'm pretty sure, if it hadn't been cut short. So we've got a hugely busy regular session, and there's some other things that we could get off our plate. I would I would just guess it's all in the hands of the governor. Now that the election's over, I would, if I had a magic wand, I'd like to maybe see it in January, about the time we're having to go down there for budget hearings anyway. And just have a quick special session ahead of the regular. But I think there's a need for one. I think there's some legislation folks are working on for one. And fortunately, I don't think this governor will call it unless people have vetted a bill and she thinks that there's a good chance for success.
I mean, this special session will be bang, bang. You get down there, you do something with taxes, and you do with the economic development and liability protection. It sounds like you can wrap that up fairly quickly.
The thing is, under our process, if you're going to have a special session, I think the best way is do your homework ahead of time, get your votes counted, know what the legislation is, why you're doing it. And, let people know what's happening, but we don't need to go down there and dork around a lot. We need to get it over with, and because that's what special sessions were designed for.
Well, tell me this, do you think we're going to see efforts to roll back governor's executive authority in emergencies like this?
I'm going to tell you, there are some lessons through this, and I like Governor Ivey. I'm her friend. I think she's about done the best she could. Every decision she's made has been perfect. I think she's erred on the side of caution more than, and by caution, I mean maybe do a little bit more as far as some of the regulations than might have been completely necessary. But that being said, this does point out our system of checks and balances is extremely important. And this has pointed out some things. The legislature is largely powerless to do anything. When the governor declares emergency powers, the legislature, we just sat there and watch, and the governor pretty well does what they want. And, you know, we won't always have a governor as good as Governor Ivey, I don't think. You know, there's been some folks, there's been some bozos in that office. And I think it's very important. I think we need a mechanism for the legislature under certain circumstances to be able to call themselves in, if for no other reason, to rein in powers of the other branches when the people's bodies think they're getting out of hand. Everybody needs a check and balance, and quite frankly, until we go back in session, the absolute power to call a session is the governor's, and there ought to be circumstances where we can call ourselves into session. It's nothing about Governor Ivey or exactly what she's done, but this set of circumstances has pointed out a huge potential problem. And I will tell you, all of us, you know, as contentious as we've become, all of us should be very concerned about unchecked power. And over the last several years, I've become more and more concerned with that. I really feel somewhat protective of our process of allowing no branch to ride herd over the other. And so I do know that there's going to be a constitutional amendment proposed, and I'll probably support it.
You got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
And it's Shapur filling in for Sean Sullivan here on FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile. You can hear me from 9 to noon on weekday mornings, the Jeff Poor Show. Sean getting a little time away. Hope everybody finds some time over the next couple of months to get a little time away, because it has...
been quite an ordeal. Sit in with me, State Representative Mike Ball from Madison, Alabama. We've been talking about everything this morning, from medical marijuana to special sessions. One thing I want to give you an opportunity to talk about, and this has been a big deal for you, and in particular probably something that maybe is on our radars, given they finally, it sounds like former House Speaker Mike Hubbard's finally going to serve some prison time after all appeals have been exhausted. Ethics reform in the state of Alabama. What do you think? Is it gonna? Could it even happen?
Well, it should happen. I have a bill that there's a lot of these during the quadrennium from 2014 to 2018. Alabama was crazy. And from my perspective, I felt like Alice in the rabbit hole. And it was this perfect storm of corruption and foolishness. And of course, Mike Hubbard, he got greedy. He crossed some lines that he shouldn't have. Quite frankly, the Hubbard investigation, I was fine with doing the investigation, and quite frankly, the behavior that he did is the behavior that we wrote the laws to prohibit, and I think the Supreme Court got it right at the end, but the process that got him there, that took so long, the thing is, there was a lot more corruption going on that was hidden. It was intentionally hidden, and it has still been kept hidden. So there are some problems in our process. And one of the things that's really troubling to me is how law enforcement, in the name of corruption prosecutions, has become, there is opportunities to politicize those grand juries. And it happened. It happened in a horrible way that's unconscionable. So I've got a bill, and of course we've had a study commission that has found some things in our ethics law that we need to make to clarify. There's some things in the process, and the main thing that I want to do is depoliticize that as much as possible, have the same rules for everybody. I am going to empower the ethics commission for all those cases to go through the ethics commission. I want to get the process as transparent as possible, as easy to understand as possible, and so I have a very comprehensive bill. It's roughly going to be roughly the same bill that I introduced last year. And I knew I wasn't going to pass it last year. I just introduced it to put it out there so people could take a look at it. But I added a couple of one of the things, I'm going to expand the number of people on the Ethics Commission to have two more members appointed by the presiding judge of the Court of Civil Appeals, Court of Criminal Appeals. And I'm also going to say that for somebody to be appointed to the Ethics Commission, they will not be able to have served on the executive committee of any political party for the previous 4 years. There's also a court ruling that's came out that seemed to take away a lot of protections of whistleblowers, and we're gonna put that. I've got that back in this draft, and just some tweaks on that. But for me, it's very important. It's it really breaks my heart how there are people in the media that do not understand what it is I saw and the problems in our process. It was just shocking to me how what happened during that time. And if folks want to get a clue as to what it is that bothers me, it's not the Mike Hubbard case that bothered me so much as the Barry Moore case. Look at what, for your listeners, I would say, look at what happened to Barry Moore during that time. Barry Moore was an innocent man, and Barry Moore was railroaded in an orchestrated political attack that was controlled out of that from the previous attorney general. And I will tell you, that sort of thing should never happen. I am You know, the Lord seems to have a way of making things work out. I would congratulate Barry Moore for his election to the United States Congress. He came through it okay, but what he went through, nobody should go through.
Yeah, thank he was later found, found not guilty on all counts. But I tell you what I think it is. Like, I think, I mean, Mike Hubbard just had made so many enemies and he was an easy target, so the media were able to run roughshod and not really have to care about the process because they had invented this villain with Mike Hubbard. And you can say what you want to about all of that, but, that didn't help the process at all.
Exactly. Mike Hubbard was a great villain. They were able to, and everybody focused on him, and what they did not see was what was going on in the process, that the under the cover of going after Hubbard, there were some other things with that grand jury. There was a pipeline from the Hubbard investigation to the political consultants managing about 30 different legislative races to try to influence those things. There was a pipeline of information going back and forth. And I will tell you, when Ed Henry discovered it and reported it, he wound up getting dragged to the grand jury and told not to talk about it. And the person that was doing it was that dragged Ed Henry to the grand jury. He was using the Grand Jury Secrecy Act to cover his misdeeds. I think he should have been prosecuted.
Well, I it doesn't look like any. It looks like this.
No, he's not. He's not. And I will tell you, I spent my career in law enforcement. I worked closely with district attorneys and prosecutors. I had never seen anything that approached like what I've seen. And I will tell you, I don't think most district attorneys condone that or would do that. But I will tell you, they've dug their – it looks to me like they dug their head and put it in the sand. And there were a lot of people that came together to cover it and hide it, and they've still done it. And quite frankly, our current attorney general should step out and – and, you know, Hubbard's in jail. He's doing his time. The case is over. Now, everything we need to talk about how we did that, what we did, and what we can do to fix it. And quite frankly, I was wanting to do that when I did the study group. And then I got attacked for wanting to gut the ethics law. By no means do I want to gut. I want to make it work. And I don't want to upset the balance of power and give certain people the absolute authority to go after their political enemies.
Well, every time they try to do something with the ethics law, they really tried it in 2019 and it really blew up and Adele Marsh's face. But you talk to people, at least on your on the Senate side, they're kind of like, well, you know, I just don't want to deal with the headache. I don't want it to become this thing. You know, the incentive seems to be a struggle to get people on board with.
It is a heavy lift. I know it's a heavy lift. Quite frankly, if the Lord lets me finish this term, it will be 20 years in the legislature. That's enough. I'm ready to go to the House. I got nothing left to prove. I spent a long law enforcement career. I know corruption when I see it. And I've talked to a lot of people. I've worked on this bill. I introduced it last time, and there are a few two-bit hacks that write articles that don't know anything about criminal investigation and don't know the proper way to do it. And if you're going to do these things, you got to do it right without interfering with politics. But the fact is, the prosecutors that were doing the Hubbard case were feeding information to these media people, smearing not just Hubbard, but everybody that was associated with him. I mean, the media is partly responsible for this. If somebody's under investigation they don't like, they demonize the people ahead of the evidence. And this is America. You know, this is America. We need to have a process that works, that's fair to everybody, and we don't need to try all these people in the media. And that's what was happening. I don't think it's as bad now as it was. I think the current administration isn't nearly as political as when Luther was the attorney general and some of his people around there. But the fact is, the process hasn't been corrected. It's just like it hasn't been changed. And the thing is, you can change the people, and it can get better for a time. But now that I know it's there, I can't ignore it. I got two more years. I'm going to do everything I can to get this out in the open and to get it addressed. But whether the rest of the legislature wants to do this or not, I'm going to give it my best shot. If they don't want to do it, I'll be ready to shake the dust off of my feet and go to the House in 2 years.
All right. Well, we got to get in a break here real quick. One more break, and then we'll be right back. Maybe you'll play us one more song.
Sure thing.
Get us through this Monday. This is Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And this is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Thank you for listening and spending a couple hours with us this afternoon. Also sitting there with us for the remainder of the program, State Representative Mike Ball. You got something for us, Representative, to close out the day?
Yeah, I got one I learned from a granddaughter. I think it's a good way to wind it up. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. When the road seems rough ahead, and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old pal said, 'cause you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got problems, I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, we'll see it through, 'cause you've got a friend in me. Some might be smarter than me, bigger and stronger too, but no one else will love you. Our friendship will never die. It will be our destiny, 'cause you've got a friend in me. You got a friend.
Through the crowd twice in one show.
How about that?
Kind of waiting there in the bullpen in the wings the whole time.
There you
Mike
go.
Ball, ladies and gentlemen, in case you didn't know, a state representative from North Alabama. How many radio shows can say that they have a singing legislator on their airways? Not that many.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
Well, there's only a couple of minutes here. Any takeaways from the election? We haven't really talked much national politics, other than maybe we could do something to our elections, but what's going to happen?
Well, you know what's going to happen. It looks like the process is playing out, and it looks like it's playing out in President in Joe Biden's favor, former vice president. And you know what? You know, just, you know, when it looked like President Trump was ahead, you heard the people on one side say, we just needed to be patient, let the process play out. And it looks like the tide has turned in Joe Biden's favor. And you know what? We should all just be patient, let it all play out. And when it all gets done, except what happens. Now, one of the things, people should be cautious about making allegations of fraud. You know, if you make an allegation, you need to have some evidence. You know, in the last set, I just made some allegations. I got some evidence. The thing is, if people's, when they make an allegation, they should be willing to put up or shut up. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't let the process play out. And it'll all be okay. You know, it's one of the reasons why having a system of checks and balances is so important, because if you follow politics, your side is going to lose every once in a while. There's going to be people in power that you don't trust. And quite frankly, nobody should be trusted with too much power.
Our founders
knew it.
You lived through the 2010 Tea Party wave. What if we 2022 Tea Party type wave in Alabama? I think it could really change.
I will tell you
locally.
I will tell you, a lot of that was a great disappointment. The 2010 thing, there were just a lot of myriad. As a matter of fact, I was right in the middle of trying to help make that happen. It was time for a Republican takeover, and what happened was a lot of the people in an insurgency cannot govern. In order for our process to actually govern, there has to be negotiation, there has to be compromise, there has to be give and take. And if you have a rebellious, an insurgent mindset, an adversarial mindset, then that's very good for attacking the authorities in power. But the thing is, people that are very good at that are very seldom very good at governing, because the work of governance requires more of a cooperative mindset if it's going to work. So I was part of that, and I will tell you, the Republican Party, you know, we've become much better at governing, but that first administration, after that 2010, I mean, it really got in a mess from 2014 to 2018. I think we're in a lot better shape now than we were then as a governing majority party.
Well, the thing I kind of wonder, though, do we have an insurgency just based on what's happening nationally? What could the primaries look like? Would you have more, you know, right of center, further to the right, challenging rhinos, and you know what I mean? Could that happen? Well, anyway.
Of course that will happen, because politics is where people they struggle for power, and the intra-party struggles, right, are a lot uglier a lot of times than the general elections.
Mike, we're up against the break. Thank you for sitting in with us today.
I enjoyed it.
I really do appreciate it. Sarah Pacific, Mike Ball. Guys, I got to get out of here. Filled in for Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile. Tune in tomorrow. Jeff Poor Show, 9 to noon. This is FM Talk 106.5.